live from the mist-enshrouded mountaintop fortress that is X and Y Communications headquarters. You're listening to the world-famous Mountaintop Podcast. And now, here's your host, Scott McKay.
Hello out there, gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Big Mountaintop Podcast. I'm excited today to introduce to you a new friend of mine. And her name is Susanna Matthews, otherwise known as the Date Maven, and she hails from sunny Wichita, Kansas. And today we're going to talk about a topic that I think you're really going to enjoy, because I do get a lot of emails from you guys saying, hey, you know what, Scott, I'm going out with women and I think things are going okay. And it looks like things are going okay. Then I don't hear from her anymore. She ghosts me after the dates. Or else I get on a couple dates, three dates, four dates with a woman, and she finally tells me, you know, I just can't put my finger on it, but I just don't think I'm feeling it for you. I just don't think there's any chemistry there. And well, hey, you know what? Let's not see each other anymore. Well, that's a bad thing for any of us guys who've ever experienced that before. So what we're going to do today is we're going to try to make sure it never happens to you again. So first of all, I want to welcome my guest, Susanna. Susanna, how are you doing?
Hey, I'm great. Thanks. Thanks so much for having me, Scott.
Oh, it's a pleasure. You're a really good dating coach.
Thank you.
And I'm just now getting to know you. You're known as the Date Maven. And you brought this idea to me of talking about these hidden detractors that are, well, I guess happening unbeknownst to us. And I talk about that with my guys a lot. These things, you know, where we think we've done everything right, but there's something we don't realize we're doing. Or even worse, we don't have the wherewithal to realize it's what's keeping us from being attractive to women. And you brought that idea, like I said, to talk about that today and bring up some of these hidden detractors so that, well, they're not hidden anymore. And I know you have a full list. You've prepared for this diligently. And I can't wait to talk about it.
Yeah. Well, so like you said, they are hidden. And most of the time, a conscientious guy is going on a date, he's doing his best, he's hitting all the checkpoints. Okay, I picked up the check, I opened the door, I complimented her, I told her she looked nice, I asked her questions about herself. And so he's thinking, I've hit all the obvious things, I've followed all the best advice. But sometimes there are things that do slip through the cracks.
Hopefully he took a bath too.
Always wise.
Yeah, and mix in some breath mints.
Absolutely.
Or otherwise you can open doors all day long, and you're just going to meet closed doors in response.
We don't want that. We don't want that for you.
So tell us what the first one on your list is.
Well, so this one's, it's a little tricky because sometimes there are really good guys who are just the strong, silent type. And, you know, maybe you're a laid back guy or you're just a soft spoken guy. But sometimes on a date, that comes across as low energy. And low energy looks like low interest to a lot of women. So if you are that strong, silent type, that's okay. Not going to try to change you, but you can amplify your vibration just a little bit.
Now, going along with that, it's amazing to me how many people, men and women, put that they're quote unquote laid back in their online dating profiles. And every time we've ever coached a woman in particular on her online dating profile, and we've seen the words, I'm a really laid back person, she's getting booty call emails from guys. Like, we can lay her back and have our way with her on the first date pretty quickly. So laid back is a really interesting way to describe oneself to begin with. But I think in the context you're talking about, women really do like a guy who has some more energy and at least isn't going to bore them to death. So how do we reconcile that with being the strong, silent type?
Yeah. So if you do have an online dating profile, there's nothing wrong with saying that you're the strong, silent type, but you want to counterbalance that or weigh that out with some other really strong assets and appealing qualities as well. And then again, when you get the date and you show up for the date, just make sure to kind of push a little bit, maybe beyond what is your natural comfort zone as far as being soft-spoken or laid back goes.
Well, that's easier said than done for a lot of guys. And we don't want to come off as creepy or inauthentic either. So how would you recommend we go about that if we're not usually the life of the party kind of person?
Yeah. And in no way would I expect anyone to kind of change or transform their personality necessarily. But it's also okay to just sort of call that reality out, call that quality out and say, hey, you know, I have to apologize. I don't go on a great deal of dates, or I'm new to online dating, or whatever the truth is. And I tend to be more of a listener than a talker. So, you know, I don't want you to interpret that the wrong way. Don't take that the wrong way. I really like listening to you and I enjoy hearing what you have to say. And at any time, if you have a question, throw it out there. I'm happy to answer. Just kind of letting her know, this is who I am. And this is how I know how it sometimes reads. And I do want to engage you. Just kind of calling out that elephant in the room is sometimes just a great way to handle it.
You know, I agree with you, yet what you're saying is going to be controversial to a lot of other people who would seek to give dating advice. And I think a lot of times guys have heard, you know, don't show any weakness, don't ever let her see you sweat. And that sort of talk goes on a lot in men's dating advice. But, you know, I'm like you, Susanna. I hear a lot from guys who are like, you know, I'm a shy guy and I haven't really beaten that down with a stick yet. So I get on dates with women and I'm really afraid I'm going to mess up, or I don't know what to say. And the next thing you know, I just get all inside my head and I get all wadded up, which is the term that I like to use. And things just go south really quickly. And that's when I tell those guys, you know, it's not the end of the world. If you say to the woman, hey, you know what? I'm kind of shy when you're just starting to get to know me, but, you know, I'll open up after a while. Or if you say, hey, you know, I don't go on a lot of dates. I'm new at this online dating thing, just like you said. A lot of guys are cringing at that, saying, oh my gosh, you know, I'm just admitting to her that I don't have any women in my life, that I'm some kind of loser. Well, I'm telling you what, even if you do have that moment where you're a little vulnerable, she's going to appreciate it, because then at least she knows what's going on. It's not like this guy is clamming up because he doesn't like me. It's not like he's disgusted by me. She's thinking all these crazy things, trying to put the puzzle pieces together in her mind. But if you just tell her what the deal is, then the weird thing is, after that little road bump, if you will, of awkwardness, things tend to smooth out. Then you know where the other person's coming from. Next thing you know, shy guy feels a little bit more comfortable. The conversation feels like it's rolling a little better, and voila, there you go, right?
Yeah. And women do love strength, but they also love authenticity. And again, as you said, if you show a little bit of that vulnerability, you're showing her that authenticity, which she's going to value. And trust me, she's not looking for perfect, because if you're perfect, then she has to be perfect. She's looking for real. And I think men and women are both craving just a lot more clarity in their communication. If you're going to go ahead and just kind of own who you are and maybe what some of your perceived shortcomings are, it's probably going to endear you to her, particularly if you can do it in a self-deprecating way.
See, so many guys have such a hard time believing that, Susanna. And I'm glad this is coming from the voice of a woman in particular, because we've been taught our whole lives that these really attractive, sexy women just love to sit up there on their pedestal and reject us. They think it's big fun. They love putting guys in the just be friend zone. And really, I agree with you 1,000%. Women are on dates because they want dates to go well, not because they want it to be this incredible debacle that they laugh with their friends about. Also, they're not hoping to put men in a just be friend zone. They're hoping to have this romantic spark that turns into something sexually hot and maybe even a relationship. So yeah, that authenticity, even that bit of vulnerability in many ways is thought of by some women as strength. Sometimes women are actually out on dates, and you know what? This might be a different angle on a hidden detractor, come to think of it. And they're thinking, look, I can tell this guy's shy. I can tell he's a little bit nervous. Why is he trying to quote unquote man up and be something he's not? Why doesn't he just own it? Why doesn't he just admit it? Because if he's so nervous that he's self-conscious about even admitting where he is, then that's not as interesting. That's not as authentic as him just saying, hey, look, you know what? Sometimes I'm kind of shy. I'm kind of new at this. Because the irony there, Susanna, is that being that vulnerable in front of a woman you're potentially attracted to is actually something that requires some strength to muster up in your life.
100%. And, you know, if she's reading you as shy and she thinks you're kind of clammed up, or you're like emotionally shut down, you're not really into the conversation, chances are she's blaming herself, or she's thinking to herself, what am I doing wrong? And why can't I draw him out more? And is he really bored? Is he not into me? So she's probably then engaging in a lot of negative, self-doubting, self-sabotaging internal talk inside her own head. And then both people are just spiraling and the date's going nowhere.
And of equal significance there, I would argue, is she's mirroring your behavior. You're not comfortable with the situation. You're a little skittish, and she's just going to start doing what you do.
Exactly.
Right. What's the next one on your list?
Well, okay, so I know a lot of the guys that I work with have what I would call kind of a wonky sense of humor. Maybe they're a little bit eccentric, or maybe they have a darker sense of humor. And there are definitely people out there who will find that appealing. But sometimes that offbeat sense of humor is an acquired taste. So you may not want to lead right out of the gate with that. Get to know her first, adapt to her sense of humor, build some rapport with her before you trot out your wackadoodle jokes or your kind of, you know, cloudy skies are always gray kind of sense of humor, or whatever your particular angle is.
Wackadoodle.
You like that word?
Is that something I can look up in a thesaurus?
That is a highfalutin word, I'll have you know.
Thesaurus always sounded like some sort of prehistoric monster to me. And that word sounds similarly so. Wackadoodle, but it's one of those words I'd never heard before, but at the same time, I know exactly what you mean instantly.
Right?
What I tell guys to do, Susanna, is to establish normalcy, for God's sake. Let her know you're a human being, not some sort of crazy, creepy person. You mentioned the dark cloud. You mentioned the dark humor. I know a guy who I worked with, and it turns out that he had a lot of death imagery in his speech. For some reason, he used to say, you know, I'm dying to do that, and it's killing me that I'm not. And I'm like, dude, that's a lot of death and killing in one sentence, when you meant neither of them. That kind of imagery. And also, a lot of times, guys are into guns and war and stuff like that. And women don't know what to make of that, because y'all are safety-seeking creatures. So, you know, this guy's talking about his guns, and he's talking about killing things and this bloody movie he saw. They're thinking, you know, what kind of guy is this? Now, there's a guy I know who's actually a concealed handgun instructor, and he lives and breathes firearms. Okay. Now, he found his honey, and they lived happily ever after. She feels safe and protected by him and his guns. But I'm sure it had everything to do with how he presents the kind of guy he is and how he talks about what he does. And I'm not sure it was first date conversation to talk about his massive gun collection. So that's a little bit of prudence that goes a long way. Now, in terms of the dark cloud, so many guys are complainers. So many women are complainers. So many people in general are complainers. And anytime you're complaining or you're ranting about things without applying a solution to it, it comes off as weakness. And that weakness is repellent to women, don't you think?
Yeah. Well, and humor is a tricky thing, because it is so subjective. And what's outrageously funny to one person is stupid and, you know, just something they want to ignore to another person. A good little filter that a guy can run a joke or a funny story through is not just, did my buddy find this funny or did the guys at work find this funny, but have I actually cracked this joke or this one-liner with a female friend? And, you know, your sister and your mom don't count.
Well, if it's a spur of the moment thing, like if you're just finding ironies and ways to twist up whatever conversation is forming before your very eyes, my quick yardstick that I measure everything by is, am I already laughing at this before I've even said it? Mm-hmm. Am I trying to restrain laughter while I'm about to say what I'm going to say because it's just so damn funny? Mm-hmm. A lot of times, kind of alluding to what you said a couple minutes ago, because it's still relevant to this part of the conversation, is that guys are kind of trying to force jokes. Guys are trying to be funny on purpose and feeling the pressure to be hilarious. And that comes off as creepy because it's inauthentic. I think humor is one of those things that you just want to let the game come to you. And if you want to practice the art of being funny, start thinking about, how can I twist the meaning of this? What is another way that this word can be used that's ironic compared to the way it was meant? And the next thing you know, you'll get better at being funny. And we've talked about that on this show before. But, you know, it's better just to have a normal, straightforward conversation than to try to force the funny, because then you're coming off as someone you're not, and that creeps women out.
Yeah. And I think we kind of have to at least make a side note about sexual humor, because this is where a lot of guys accidentally get into trouble. There are a lot of women who appreciate it, but usually, you know, you talked about establishing normalcy. It's because the groundwork has been laid, the foundation has been laid. So if you're having a lot of witty banter and there seems to be a lot of sexual chemistry and it flows into innuendo, that's great. Enjoy it. But where guys get in trouble is if they try to introduce that too soon, or in a way that feels forceful, or like it doesn't match the tone of the situation or the tone of the conversation. It feels very foreign and intrusive to the woman.
Haha, you said laid twice. See, I think that's kind of an example of what you're talking about. You wouldn't want to bust out with that on a date, right?
Right.
But you're laughing.
I am laughing because you and I have the rapport that makes that joke work.
What a horrendous mixed message to send to these guys on this.
I know. It's awful.
Guys, don't do what I just did. Don't go Beavis and Butthead on dates. Don't think everything is a big sexual innuendo and drop it on the table just because you can. Here's what I do. I wait for the woman to start joking like that. Now, see, a lot of times, however, women with a particularly spunky personality like that, who kind of don't give a care about that sort of thing, will start throwing sexual innuendo jokes on the table just to see how you react to them. Mm-hmm. Now, the irony there, Susanna, is a lot of times guys are thinking, okay, how can I start talking about sex so this woman will feel more sexual towards me, a la all the pickup artist teachings from, 10 years ago, which of course doesn't work. You know, being masculine and being sexy works a lot better at getting women to think about sex. But then when the woman throws down the gauntlet first and starts making sexual jokes at the guy is all of a sudden like, oh, now what do I do? Is this a trap or something like that? You know, like Admiral Akbar from Star Wars. It's a trap. You know, guys don't know what to do. Gentlemen, if she starts it, if she starts anything, you can continue it. If she starts talking about sex, if she starts touching you, you can touch her where she touched you back. If a woman is leading with some sort of social idea like that, it's pretty much okay to traipse onto that territory, for a lack of a better way to put it. What do you
meet her in kind?
Well, now hold on a second. What if she doesn't realize how she's coming off? That's on her, isn't it?
Yeah, that's tricky because a lot of women don't, and this would be a conversation or a whole separate podcast, whole separate show for women, many of whom aren't aware until after something has come out of their mouths, and then they went, "Uh-oh, I can't bring that back." That happens all the time.
Well, just like the guy can be vulnerable, she can bring that back. Mm-hmm. She can say something like, oh, you know what? I just figured out how that sounded, and that's not what I meant.
Right.
I think I've had that happen a time or two on a date.
Where a woman corrected herself?
Yes. And of course, I was relentless. I was ruthless.
No. Subconsciously, you meant it.
I know. Oh, come on now. I see you working over there. A little bit of humor goes a long way. And I think lightness and warmth often is credited to you as humor by women, and especially just relaxing and having fun. Women laugh when they're having fun. They don't necessarily need you to be funny. And I think that's something that guys sometimes don't grasp so well. What's the next one on your list?
Well, the next one would be the pushover. The words, "I don't know, what do you want to do?" are the death rattle of a relationship, even if they're uttered before there's a relationship. Show some strengths, show some opinion, have some backbone, have some ideas. The "I don't know, what do you want to do?" it just smacks of, oh my God, we've been together for 20 years and we're so bored with each other.
Here's a hint. Emily and I have been together for 11 years and I still don't dare breathe those words around this house because she's going to tell me to man up and come up with something, make a decision. And that's my job. Guys, it's just like we talk about all the time around here, and I'm going to go ahead and flog this dead horse again. If you are leading in a woman's best interest, she's going to be glad you're leading. So listen, make sure you know what the wants, needs, fears, and likes are, and plan accordingly. Because even if she is kind of an alpha woman at work, and she's a big-time manager, has a lot of people working for her, she's still not going to want to get into the passenger seat of your car on a first date and start ordering you around and telling you where she wants to go. Now, if she is like that, you're probably going to feel like that's a bit of a foreign situation as a guy. Don't worry about that either. In the low likelihood that that does happen, you can say, well, I actually had already planned something really nice. And sometimes you can watch her relax and go, oh, wow, really?
Yeah, she may have been testing you, and she may not have even been realizing that she was testing you. But sometimes women will do that. They're used to taking charge. They're used to being in control in all the other areas of their life. They're pushing forward, coming with the boss woman act. And then when you say, oh, interesting, nice, I respect it, but here's what I had planned. How does that sound? Then you're right. She can kind of relax and know, okay, I don't have to be in the driver's seat with this guy. He actually has his you-know-what together.
Well, I was thinking along the wavelength of, maybe this woman's not used to a guy having a plan. Mm-hmm. She's used to being able to get in the car and act like Eunice from What's Up, Doc. Howard, let's go here. Let's go there. Don't you know that we need to do this? And maybe most guys are just kind of in awe of that as soon as they see that part of her personality and go, well, all right, here's a woman who knows what she wants. Whereas when the guy kind of gently reminds her, you know, I have a plan here, she might be taken completely off guard by that.
She might be, but that doesn't necessarily mean that's a bad thing.
Well, exactly. I think it would be a wonderful thing for both of them. Mm-hmm. But talking about this guy who can't make a decision and the term you use, which is pushover. So many times we default into calling that guy Mr. Nice Guy, but I think pushover is a great descriptor of what Mr. Nice Guy can look like, because see, he's trying not to lose her. Mm-hmm. He's playing prevent defense. He's saying, okay, I don't want her to be offended. I don't want her to not want to go on a second date. So we're going to do what she wants to do. We're going to walk on eggshells around here. And that's just repulsive to women. And I think guys a lot of times absolutely do, Susanna, think they're doing the right thing when really they're doing what's killing it.
Well, women can sense the insecurity behind that. And they may not call you on it, but they'll just not call you at all, because that energy of insecurity, once that's planted in her mind, it's hard for her to shake.
That's like a Henny Youngman joke. Hey, I don't want to call you on it. I'm just not going to call you at all.
Ba-dum-bum. Exactly.
Exactly. What's the next one on your list?
Well, I know that when I say bad manners, everyone kind of rolls their eyes and they think, right, yeah, I know, whatever. And this is something that's been discussed ad infinitum. But it does merit repetition, because I continue to see and hear about on a weekly basis some behaviors that are just really not appropriate. And here's the thing about manners. It's not about rules in a book. It's not about white tablecloths and white linen napkins and ladies and gentlemen and whatnot. It's about context. Behaving the right way is about knowing the situation and knowing your audience in that situation. So like the guy who walks across the parking lot to go into a nice restaurant and does the one finger nose blow without benefit of a tissue and just lets it all fly and land wherever. Well, that's bad manners in that context. If he did the same thing in a wheat field, that wouldn't be bad manners in that context.
Hold on. If you're doing the farmer's sneeze in front of a woman at any point in your history, I think you need to call one or the other of us for immediate coaching. Has that ever happened to you? Is that what these guys up there in corn-fed Wichita do on dates, Susanna? They do farmer sneezes?
Let me tell you, I love them all, but there are some men and women who sometimes need a little help polishing up for the city when they come to visit.
I don't know if I'd call that polishing up. I think that might be trying to turn a lump of coal into a diamond, Susanna. I mean, if a guy is doing that around women, let alone on a first date, I think we got deeper issues.
Yeah, well, we can only do so much to civilize, can't we, Scott?
Let's have some more examples. Go ahead and give me some more, because I know you got them. We were talking about them before.
Well, yeah, I don't know. Someone might be listening to this while they're eating or something. I don't want to gross anyone out. But the whole gum on the plate would be at the gross end of the spectrum. Or even just the guy who every time you look at him in a public place, or maybe you're at a party, glance at him across the room. Every time you see him, he's texting on his phone. That doesn't make a woman feel appealing. It doesn't make her feel wanted. It doesn't make her feel secure. So the phone is probably the biggest pitfall for so many of us, male and female. And it's one of the easiest to correct.
Now, you have two things there. I don't want to let this thing about the gum on the plate go under the bridge, because everybody knows you don't put your gum on the plate. You just casually reach under the table and stick it under the table. That's what you do with your gum.
Ah.
Right? By the way, never feel the underside of a table at any restaurant. You'll be sorry. Because that's where the boogers go, too. Out of the frying pan and into the fire, right?
We have just really devolved this conversation.
Hey, but it's for the good of the cause, you know? We want these guys to be edumacated around here.
Amen.
So here's what I think. I don't know why you're chewing gum on a date to begin with. What's up with that?
Fresh breath, maybe? Nerves? I don't know.
I'd do mints or banaca instead. I wouldn't be chewing my cud on a date all night. It just sounds almost like stereotypically douchey to me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's a guy who plays for the San Antonio Spurs, and he doesn't use a mouth guard. He chews gum while he's playing basketball.
Hmm.
I love that about that guy. But okay, That's an exception. He's not doing it on a date.
Well, yeah. And again, I would throw context at you. He's not in a dating situation, and his context makes that eccentric but acceptable.
Now, speaking of context, you mentioned texting. while you're on a date with a woman, I think you should give her your attention, not someone else far away at the other end of an electronic device. Yet, women do that on dates too. The caveat there is if she's got kids with a babysitter or something, I think that's okay. But anybody who's in a social situation with someone else and they're texting someone who's not in front of them, I think that's just flat out rude. Yet I know all the millennials and all the kids nowadays are doing that. Yeah. I see them all the time at restaurants in groups of four or five. None of them are talking to each other. They're all texting someone else.
Yeah. And you know, I'm going to rewind the conversation actually to pre-date. This is why people are failing to get dates in the first place. You're at a party, you're mixing, mingling, or at least that's what you're supposed to be doing. What are you doing instead? You're on your phone. You're probably failing to meet and connect with several interesting and attractive people. As I kind of people watch and look around as I'm at different activities and events, I notice that happening. I think, why is it people need me so much? Why do they need a dating coach and matchmaker so much? Well, it's because they're really letting those opportunities slip through their fingers because they're so busy and preoccupied on their cell phones that they're just not seeing the opportunities that are right there in front of them.
You know, everywhere I go, I see pretty women, and a lot of times they're buried in their smartphone. Mm-hmm. And that's a function of them wanting to feel like they're appearing socially connected, not mm-hmm. like some loser who doesn't have any friends. But it's also keeping them from that opportunity to potentially connect with a real person, for example, a guy who might approach them. Because most men won't approach a woman who's buried in her cell phone. They'll think they're bothering her.
Yeah, unless it's to make a little lighthearted joke about, you know, what's so important or what's the latest on BuzzFeed or, you know, that could be your opener. That could be your icebreaker if you feel so inclined to use it. It kind of lightheartedly calls attention to the fact that she's not really present where she is, but not in a way that's going to offend her or put her off most likely.
Well, that's assuming you can even make eye contact with her to begin
with. Hey, give it a try. You might like it.
Well, I think on dates, though, a lot of times if a guy says to a woman, I want you to know I'm throwing my cell phone in the back seat for the night. And I actually used to do that. I mean, I was dating before the age of smartphones, but we certainly had mobiles. I had a Trio device. Remember those? They actually had a keyboard built into it. You know, they weren't really a smartphone. And I would take it and I would symbolically toss it in the back seat of my car when I would meet a woman for a date. And I'd laugh and I'd say, we're not going to need this tonight. And I think she would appreciate that. She would always kind of laugh and give me like a knowing nod going, hey, that's pretty slick. I like it. I think anytime you're out with someone one-on-one, for example, a date, and you're not giving that person your full attention, you're not focused on that other person. And I don't mean in a leering kind of creepy way. I mean, just in a social sort of way. I think it's a hidden detractor if you're not doing that.
Yeah, and I like that move, throwing the phone in the back of the car, saying we're not going to need this, not only because it lets her know clearly that your attention and focus is going to be on her, but it also shows you're the man. You just took a stand. You're going to be the leader and you're going to set the tone. And now she kind of has the opportunity to do the same.
Yeah, I mean, for the guy's part, that leadership of, hey, we're not going to be hanging on our phones tonight. We're not going to take calls from other people. Think about how silly she'll feel if she starts taking calls from people when you've already actually objectively served notice that you're not going to do that on a date.
Right on.
What else do you have on your list?
All right. Well, the next thing that I really think we need to share with people is being judgy in a polarizing way. What a detractor that can be. Now, I know that there's some potential misunderstanding here because on the one hand, we're saying, hey, show who you are and grow that backbone and stand up for what you believe in. And that's all very strong and powerful advice, I think. But you have to stop just shy of the tone and the attitude that says, but there's no room for anyone else's opinion but mine. You see what I'm saying? That judginess that says, I'm right and there's no other way and you're an idiot and not worth my time if you're one of those people over there who believes that and not this.
My favorite story about that was I was out on a date years ago with a Southwest Airlines flight attendant. And she said that she'd just been on a date with a guy who was talking about flying Airbus aircraft. And of course, Southwest Airlines only flies Boeing 737s. And she was kind of gently reminding him, well, if you flew an Airbus A320, then it wasn't Southwest. And the guy argued with her. He was like, no, I'm pretty sure it was Southwest. I'm pretty sure it was an A320. And she was kind of like, in a friendly sort of way, because she had a wonderful personality. She was like, I fly on those airplanes all day long. I work there. I've been to the trainings. They're Boeing 737s, and Southwest only flies 737s. And the guy held his ground. You know, it wasn't 10 minutes into the date. She threw her napkin on the table and left. And the guy was like, well, what's wrong? Well, see, not only was he my way or the highway, he was dead wrong, and he was arguing with someone who was clearly going to be more of an expert than he was. That's just incredibly unattractive.
Yeah.
And boorish, if you ask me.
Being able to admit when you are wrong is really appealing. It shows humility. It shows genuineness.
Well, the first mistake that poor bastard made was trying to argue with someone who was an expert in her field on what she was an expert at. And that's something a lot of guys try to do. It's kind of like if you go to a professional comedy show, and unfortunately for you and your date, they put you in the front row, just don't say anything. Don't heckle those guys. Don't try to find a comeback for any of their jokes, because they've been doing this longer than you. They're better at it than you are. You're going to lose. You're going to be embarrassed. Yet sometimes guys, especially when they're trying to impress a date, feel like they have to go toe-to-toe with these guys, and it's just going to end up really bad because the guy feels like, I have to be alpha. I have to be in charge. Look, if there's a situation where someone is an expert at what they know, you kind of just want to relax, nod your head, and go into, okay, information gathering mode, not I have to be the alpha dog in every situation in my entire life mode. Because once again, here we are, full circle. That's not only inauthentic, it's weakness. Mm-hmm. Because that vulnerability that allows you to be teachable is actually attractive, because it's actually requiring more strength for you to be reserved and hold your tongue than it is for you to go toe-to-toe against that professional comedian at a comedy club.
Beautifully put. I like the way you said that, Scott.
Now, another thing I think goes along with what you're saying here, and I want your opinion on this, is a lot of times guys are busily trying to get into a woman's pants. They're trying to have sex with her. And then what do they do on dates? They slut shame her. What kind of clothes are you wearing? And these sometimes subtle ways of shaming a woman for being female and being sexual and even being flirty will just cause a woman to clam up.
Yeah.
It's not like she's going to have more sex with you and be more sexually attracted to you because you're making her feel even subtly shameful for who she is and for being a red-blooded sexual woman.
Yeah. And when a guy talks about other women he's been with, or even other women who might be pursuing him, and, oh, she's texting me all the time, she wants me so bad, you know, the gist of it. Well, in her mind, she's thinking, if this date doesn't go well, is he going to perceive any attempt at communication on my part in the same way that I'm relentlessly pursuing him? Is he going to be talking about me in that way if I have sex with him on the next date that he goes on? I mean, she doesn't want to be that conversational fodder for him in his next date. So she's pretty likely to play it safe from that point on.
Great point. Anything else on your list?
Well, the last thing I have is really the disclosure of too much too soon. And men and women both fall into this trap of revealing every skeleton from the farthest corners of their closet on the first or second date, and just hanging all the dirty laundry out there and all the past relationship drama. And that really goes against what I would hope would be the energy and the intention of the first date, which, as you said, is just to kind of keep it sweet and light and fun and flirty and determine, is there enough interest that we want a second date?
And not only the ex drama, save the coworker drama, the boss drama, and especially the medical procedure drama.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and a lot of people seem to feel some kind of obligation to disclose whatever their diagnosis is, or whatever they're on medication for, whatever kind of treatment plan. But you know what? That is just not need to know information on a first date.
And I've noticed the older we get, the collective we, the more likely we are to discuss all the medical stuff with people.
Yeah.
I've seen groups of people, you know, maybe septuagenarians or older, and all they're talking about is how they went to a doctor and I've got this ache and pain and I'm taking this medication, and it's their socialization together. But I think if you're on a first date and you're talking like that, you've got trouble brewing.
Yeah, I've noticed that too generationally, that does seem to be kind of what they bond over. It's sort of their common shared experience. And I get that, but is that sexy? Is that appealing? And is that really what you want all of your conversation to revolve around with your romantic interest? You know, even at 60, 70, 80 years old, there are other things to talk about.
You know, nobody's perfect, and we all have what we're dealing with in life. But if you're identifying with either an illness or a self-perceived limiting belief, I find that a lot of times guys are like, well, women aren't going to like me because I'm diabetic or because I have some disorder or because of this that goes on in my life. And then it's all they ever talk about. Mm-hmm. It's like their hobby is being diabetic.
Yeah.
So what happens is they go on dates with women and they say things like, well, the first thing you need to know about me is I'm diabetic. And the next thing you know, they don't get a second date and they think it's because they were diabetic. But the truth is, I believe, Susanna, it's just because they talk so much about it. That's what happened there. It wasn't the disorder itself. It was their attachment to talking about it and their identification with it.
Yeah, that identity is a key thing. You know, sometimes I will ask people who they're alcoholic or a former drug addict or diabetic or whatever. Well, who were you before you were that? Who were you before this happened in your life? Those parts of you are still in there, and those are the parts of you to lead with. And you know what? I've asked the same question of people who didn't necessarily have some kind of malady, but people who are extraordinarily wealthy and who kept trying to lead with their affluence and their material success. And I thought, you know what? BS. I don't care about that. If you don't want a gold digger, if you want a genuine girl who's a good girl with a good heart, you're not going to tell her about all your ships and your planes and your second homes and how many Rolexes you have. You need to remember who you were before all of your identity was wrapped up in that.
You know, that was my thought exactly, that a guy like that just keeps attracting gold diggers and then he gets all upset that all women are gold diggers. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's who he's attracting. Great, great points. Susanna, I want to give these guys a chance to get to know you a little better. Tell them about your new book.
Well, I would love that. So my book is called Revising Mrs. Robinson, and it's an exploration of intergenerational romantic relationships between older women and younger men. And I did a lot of interviews with women around the country and just kind of a lot of human observation, and also dove into the social science research for this. So it has a little bit of a self-help tone, a lot of narrative, a lot of practical advice, and I really wanted to explore personal and social reactions, both positive and negative, to those age gap relationships.
And of course, Mrs. Robinson is a central character in the iconic film The Graduate, which launched Dustin Hoffman's career back in the 60s. And of course, he's going out with Mrs. Robinson's daughter and ends up being seduced by Mrs. Robinson. You know, it's kind of like the flagship film for older women, younger men relationships.
Exactly. And I think it's notable that 2017 is the 50-year anniversary of that movie. And so I'm sure we'll be seeing and hearing a lot about it as it's kind of trotted out and celebrated all over again. So I hope that people will want to continue the conversation.
Great movie. Weird movie in parts. Like mm-hmm. The swimming pool scene is just strange.
The ending was strange.
That too. Yeah. But his car is really cool. He has that little Alfa Romeo. Yeah. One of those would be worth a lot of money nowadays.
Oh, yeah.
So guys, as always, I've set up a special URL for you so that you can learn more about the Date Maven without having to remember the datemaven.com. So go ahead and go to www.mountaintoppodcast.com/maven, M-A-V-E-N. Let's do it that way. Although something inside me tells me suddenly everybody's going to remember the datemaven.com anyway, and that was totally unnecessary. But in deference to what we always do around here by force of habit, www.mountaintoppodcast.com/maven, M-A-V-E-N, and you will learn more about Susanna Matthews. Some people say she looks a lot like Linda Carter from Wonder Woman fame, so you can decide for yourself. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
So again, thank you so much for a great conversation, Susanna. I think a lot of guys took a lot from this. Great stuff.
It was exciting to be here. Thanks, Scott.
And of course, guys, as always, go to www.mountaintoppodcast.com. for show notes and to get in on my newsletter, where you'll get nonstop fluff-free information every day to your inbox on how to be better with women, how to be a better man. If you've decided that you would rather go above and beyond that and get specialized one-on-one coaching to help you be the man you know you were born to be, contact us by going to mountaintoppodcast.com/coaching and discover how we can help you out. Lots of guys are doing that. And lots of guys are already on the road to massive wild success in different areas of their life, not only with women, in their relationships, in their career, and even building an entrepreneurial lifestyle by working with us. All that's there for you at www.mountaintoppodcast.com/coaching. Or you can just click the big red button right there on the main page for the podcast. Until I talk to you again soon on the next big show, this is Scott McKay from XMY Communications. Be good out there.
The Mountaintop Podcast is copyright 2016 by XMY Communications. All rights reserved worldwide. Be sure to visit www.mountaintoppodcast.com for show notes. And while you're there, sign up for the XMY Communications newsletter. This is Ed Roy Odom speaking for the Mountaintop Podcast.